Blog Talk Radio.
Where do we start this? And the answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time. Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls. I'm tweeting that puppy. Okay. Hey, everybody. I'm Jeffrey Gittimer, and I'm the best-selling author of The Little Red Book of Selling.
And I'm Jen Glickow, founder of Sales in a New York Minute, and this is Sell or Die. Real-world sales talk, no bullshit, no tricks, just how to make sales, whether you're in Las Vegas or London.
You know, every week we're in a different city, Las Vegas or London. What was it last week, Manchester or Manhattan?
It's our thing. It's our shtick.
It's our shtick. I got it. We're interviewing the best minds on selling and personal development, and we're doing it live. How come live? Because, dude, you make sales live in the moment. No pre-taping, your sales presentation. It's live. Oh, wait a minute. I brought this tape with me. I'm sure you'll like this, Mr. Jones. Please have your pen in your hand while I play this pre-recorded tape.
Yeah, seriously. So we're taking your sales questions. Send them to us on Twitter at Gittimer or at Jen in a New York Minute, or email them to sellordie@gittimer.com.
Reading every single one of your questions, the man behind the glass, actually he's right in front of me today because we're redoing our glass, our producer, the great Doug Branson. Hey, Doug.
Hello, Jeffrey. Hello, Jennifer. A reminder to our listeners, you can listen to us live on Wednesdays at blogtalkradio.com/sellordie and make sure to subscribe to us on iTunes. Just search Sell or Die. And while you're there, leave us a 5-star review. Help great salespeople just like yourself find this show. Jeffrey, Jennifer, what's going on in your sales world?
We want a 10-star review. Can you give 10 stars?
You could do two. You could sign up and do two reviews of
two five stars.
Stars?
That would be great.
That's
but
math.
You would have to like have two different usernames. But if we're worth it.
That's
we're totally
right.
Worth the extra just, username.
Move to Chicago. They have two different voters there for the same people every.
Hey, that's a good segue. That's a good segue into our coming up.
Oh, coming up, it's election season. So we've decided to bring a politician who's also a salesperson. Well, all politicians are salespeople. This guy is actually a salesperson, the great Michael Silverman. He's the mayor of Livingston, New Jersey, and the president of Gloron Agency. It's an insurance agency that sells insurance to anyone that will buy.
Plus, we're discussing an often forgotten sales technique. No, it's not closing ratio. It's not asking for the sale. It's listening. And you'll want to listen to that.
So let's get to it. It's time to sell or die.
Before we get to Michael, let's take a couple of your questions about the world of sales. So, Doug, who's up first?
Up first from reddit.com/r/sales, a great community for all salespeople. It's this username is he who eats curry. All the Reddit usernames, we comment on them every week. They're all, we should give an award for the best one.
You know what?
We
the
should.
Reason they have these, there's so many people on Reddit, they have to come up with these wild, you know, it's
sorry,
like,
everything's taken. It's like domain names.
Right. I want to be Bob on Reddit. Really? I want to be Bob who comes from hunger.
All right. Well, he who eats curry writes, I work in the biotech field, and one of our primary distributors is quite well known in the process. In the process analytics, measuring things like pH, conductivity, water systems, and we get leads pretty often from interested companies. My problem is being able to say the right words over the phone to convince them that an initial meeting is necessary. How do I get my foot through the door?
That's a very difficult question. First, you have to get the attraction of the potential buyer. Otherwise, he's not going to, you know, someone comes to your house. You're going to let a stranger in?
Yeah, but I'm confused because these people are calling them, right? He said, we get leads often. So if they're calling you, they already are interested.
Yeah, he said the leads are interested company. I guess his question is how they're interested in maybe the product, but how does he get that first meeting locked in?
by
the best way to do it is offer something of value and educate them, tell them something that they might not know that's going to help them so that they want to meet with you.
Just ask them a simple question of what made you call. And they'll elaborate on what it is that they want. And from that point in, you just say, hey, the best way for me to explain that to you is if we sit down and talk about it. So what made you call? Let's sit down and talk about it. Done. I don't think you have to go into any kind of depth or detail or, you know, crazy talk. But obviously, the non-salesperson, which is he who eats curry, he needs to have an understanding that you don't make the sale on the phone. You make the sale face-to-face. So just do the least you have to do to get an appointment. That's the advice.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could talk yourself out of that first initial meeting if you say too much.
Right, exactly. The only thing you can do is take no. They already want you. They called you.
All right, next question comes from More Adventurous. More Adventurous writes, I work at a tech startup. I'm a fresh manager of a sales team of 5 people. I love my job and motivated each and every single day and literally work in the trenches with my guys. I have goals similar to theirs that I've got to hit as well. We all make base plus commission. One of my higher performers just disclosed to me today that he's been struggling for the past week or so. He's just having trouble getting excited by the job. He's bored with the process. How do I motivate someone who isn't motivated by money?
Find out what he is motivated by. Maybe he's motivated by the fact that your tech startup is helping. I don't know what they're doing, but I'm assuming they're doing something to help other people.
Yeah, but the bottom line is if that guy isn't enjoying what he's doing, he's going to half-ass it anyway. He has to go back to his root and figure out why he took this job in the first place and resell himself on the efficacy of loving his job. Then he can start to talk to people.
The key is he has to resell himself. The manager, who I forget his name, but he can't be the one to sell his sales guy. The sales guy has to sell himself.
Exactly. Next.
All right, next question comes from not a very fly white guy. That might win the award.
That might win.
All right, next one.
We should do something for the best username. Like, let's send them a book or something.
Yeah, my fly's unzipped white guy.
All right, not a very fly white guy writes, I work in medical diagnostics. By the way, all 3 of these have worked in either tech or med. So I don't know what that says. I work in medical diagnostics. I have a great client that has taken off and running since practically the day I cold called and signed her on. So this is a good client. She does about 14 grand a month in revenue for me, which is quite a lot, and is my 5th biggest client. Unfortunately, our lab keeps messing up on her. We have a very small error rate when it comes to running these tests overall, but somehow we've messed up 4 of their tests in 1 month, and they are livid. I can't say I blame them. At this point, I'm really not sure how to attempt to retain this business. The issues the issues that are happening are 100% out of my hands. If they ask me if it's going to be an issue again, I can't promise them anything. I have talked to my boss about this, and he gave me a fairly basic, just do what you can. I'll probably lose a year of commission. What do I do to retain this client?
Stop making mistakes.
Well, it's not, but he can't do anything about it.
Yeah, but there has to be a way that you can go back in and get better quality control or go back in and do something. And you're going to have to give away a bunch of stuff to this client in order to keep them. I mean, the next 10 tests are going to be on us. The next 10 invoices are going to be on us.
Jen, that next call that he makes with that client is going to be awkward. What should he say?
He better have something to give them, like Jeffrey said.
No, go back.
If he's just calling to say, sorry, we messed up again.
Yeah, dude.
They may say, well, you messed up one too many times.
Hey,
we're out.
Third time's a charm.
Yeah.
They could already
be looking for someone else. And so he should have a proactive conversation with them about, I know we messed up, and own it and tell them what they're going to do to fix it.
Jen, there's no maybe they're looking for somebody else. They're looking for somebody else.
Well, if it was me, I'd be looking for someone else the first time.
Exactly. Go back and look at the Honeymooners on YouTube. And whenever Jackie Gleason or Ralph Cramden screws up, he looks at his wife and Alice and goes, hum, 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 because there's not really a whole lot you can do.
Well, would you advocate in this situation a type of conditional approach where You somehow, if he could get it approved with his boss, you know, discount them.
No, give it for free.
On the condition that they don't make another error.
Oh, like it's this price, but if we make another error, it's actually
right.
lower.
Would that, have you ever experienced that? Have you ever?
I think you got to go in there and talk about error free, doubling up your quality control and giving away double the amount that they screwed up on. Minimum.
Yeah, right.
There's some companies that do that, Doug. Like, you know, they guarantee no downtime. But if there is downtime, they give you some money back, you know, for the loss of whatever.
And so I
don't know what these tests are costing them. If they're costing them a fortune, like.
Yeah, I would just say this. There's got to be a place where these people who got the errors made can go to report this. I'll guarantee you there's stuff posted up online about how they screwed up.
Yeah, it just sounds like tough luck for this Reddit user because he said the error rate overall for this company was fairly small, and that's just tough. All right, next question comes from King Candy. King Candy writes, I'm trying to get the attention of a potential client and started with a few calls and email. We use email tracking, and it appears as if he's never opened any of the emails that I've sent him.
Oh, my goodness.
Have you ever heard of this? I want to slowly escalate my reach out methods. And the next obvious step in my mind is a letter.
No, pick up the freaking phone.
Pick up the phone.
Right. Well, the next thing to do is for me not to communicate with this guy again so he can delete it or throw it away. Pick up the phone. King Candy is a millennial. King Candy is assuming that if he sends enough emails or enough letters that something will happen and this guy will ultimately call him back. It'll never happen. If you're 0 for 2 or 0 for 3, the odds are you're going to go 0 for 4. Just following up on that email that I sent and wondering if you could give me a call. Delete. This will be my third time that I've delete.
Tough situation, Jen. Any advice for King Candy?
I would have picked up the phone a while ago.
Yeah. We'll get a Milky Way,
but it's not to write snail mail, right? It's not to write
no.
a letter.
No.
No, I mean, if they're not opening your emails and you know you're not giving them a reason, they look at you as someone who's trying to sell them something, not someone who's trying to help them. Another thing you can do is maybe go on LinkedIn and see who you know in common with this potential client and get an introduction because that's going to be your best way in if you know. Someone that they know and respect and someone that you know and respect makes that connection for you.
So I want to thank everybody for all those questions. If you have sales questions, you can send it to sellerdie@gittimer.com. Now, I want to get to our very special guest, the great Michael Silverman, Mayor Michael Silverman, or Mayor
Mr.
Mike.
Mr. Mayor.
Mayor Mike, as I like to call him, is the chief insurance advisor of Gloron Agency Incorporated in New York City, a third generation insurance provider. He's the mayor of his city, Livingston, New Jersey, which is a real city, and he's the ultimate relationship guy. Actually, I'm friends with him, and so is Jen. Michael, welcome to Sell or Die.
Jeff, Jen, thank you very much.
We're so glad you're here.
It's our pleasure, Michael. Do we need to vote for you in this upcoming election, or are you?
Well, being that neither of you live in Livingston, New Jersey, I think that would be a problem. So we'll just.
But we can donate to your cause.
Yeah, we can donate,
yes,
and we can move there very quickly, as many people do during an election.
I believe that's going to get a no comment from Michael.
It's called
correct.
Isn't there a party called the Dead People Voting Party?
Anyway.
Okay, so Michael, how did you come up with the name Gloron Agency?
Yeah.
Well, as a third-generation insurance broker, it's a family business.
Gloria and Ron, obviously.
Very close. Gloria and Aaron.
Cool.
Oh, wow.
All right.
That was awesome.
So those are my parents. And we do have a running family joke that my mother's name is Maureen. We'd be the moron agency.
That's a good joke, Michael. I didn't know insurance guys are funny.
Hey, we're all kinds.
All right, cool. But my dad's company was Marmac. My father's name was Max, and my uncle's name was Marty.
So there you go. If it fits, you make it work, and you run with it.
I will bet you that there are 10,000 family businesses named after the first two names of people?
Most likely. It's so simple. It's so easy. And it's about family. And that's what my business is. That's what other people's businesses are. And that's what's great about this country when it comes to small businesses.
Do you know the origin of EJ Corvettes?
I do not.
Eight Jewish Korean War vets.
Ah. Well,
and now you know the rest of the story. They were the first discount house.
I do remember Corvettes.
Oh, you go,
Jack. And not the automobile.
Right.
Okay, so Michael, you're running this family business. How much dedication goes into it?
There is no answer to that question because the dedication is everything I have and everything my team has. You know, when you run a family business or any type of business, the number one thing that you have is who you are and what you bring to your clients or customers. You know, I treat everybody that is part of our organization as family, whether it's an employee or a client. And when we onboard someone to become a client, part of the phraseology in our welcome letters, welcome emails are, is very simple. Welcome to the family. So there's just no amount of how much time or how much effort. It's everything. It's my entire being.
And I was talking to Jen this afternoon in anticipation of you coming on the show. And the difference between someone who has an ownership position or a leadership position in a family business takes it a hell of a lot more seriously than somebody that has a job at an agency.
Well, of course.
Yeah. And
my name and my family name is on the front door.
That's why I would rather do business with you. That's why, because I know you're dedicated to the task. And
wait a minute. What time do you wake up, Michael?
4 o'clock.
Every day?
Yeah, every day.
You know what, though? 4 in the afternoon, he's getting plenty of sleep.
I mean, yes, that itself is dedication.
Well, you know, there are only 29 hours in a day and only 9 days in a week. And I have a lot of things to do.
Exactly. What this country needs is a good 8-cent nickel. Groucho Marx.
Okay, so I would argue you're selling the hardest, one of the hardest.
No, it's the hardest.
Things to sell on the planet. Because people either don't know they need insurance or they don't want to talk about it. What kinds of challenges are you facing in making the sale?
Well, I must tell you, I have to disagree with you. I don't think it's the hardest thing.
We like controversy. Bring it on.
But you know what? I don't think it's the hardest thing because in 30 years of doing what I'm doing, I have found everybody wants insurance. The question is, how do I pay for it?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think the issue is, do I want to have coverage and protection? Everybody wants coverage and protection. People just don't want to pay for it. That's the difference. And that's one of the obstacles that we have. Hey, how do we show someone that has exposures, whether it's as simple as automobile insurance, homeowners insurance, or then getting a little more complicated into income protection, disability insurance, or life insurance? How do you get what you really want, but still be able to afford it? That's our job. That's why we don't sell a policy to somebody.
Yeah, I'm going to give you an answer to that. The more prepared you are, the more realistic you seem to this other person, the less salesy you are, the more conversational you are, the more the person's going to have confidence in you, and the more the person's going to trust you because you're an advisor, not a salesperson.
Absolutely correct. I could not have said that better. And
that's correct.
I
could not have said that better.
Being that I love what I do because I truly believe we're protecting people and their families, you know, for me, all I want to do is sit down with people who love their families, love their businesses, and want to make sure that if the couple should happen, the family can continue, the business can continue without upheaval. Now, there's always emotional upheaval. There's nothing we can do about that.
Mm-hmm.
If someone passes away early on, later in life. It's horrible. Yes. There are automobile accidents. There are hurricanes. There are storms. There are fires. These upset the balance of family lives.
And they're already in New Jersey and New York, which makes it worse because they already have attitude about
it. Is that time of year? Oh, are you talking about the people?
Yeah.
Oh, well, we work with people in the Carolinas. We work with people all over the country.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I just learned this today. They're licensed in almost every state.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes, 47 states.
Wow, what are the three?
And,
Alaska?
Jen, do you remember?
South Dakota. I forget the other two.
One of the Carolinas.
Ooh,
South Carolina.
South Carolina? Wow.
And Wyoming.
Oh, well.
But you want to be licensed there. So, like, if any of our listeners are from there, it sounds like if they request a policy or to work with you, you'll get licensed there, like, in 40 minutes or something like that.
It's very simple to do, and yes, we can.
Cool. I have two friends in South Carolina.
Well, there you go.
I will call them up and refer them.
It's a fairly large state, but you only have two friends.
I'll call both of them.
You only have two friends?
Yeah. Well, in South
Carolina.
Okay, so tell me what it's like for a new salesperson who's in insurance. How does that person break into the insurance business or the insurance sales business? You have a family business. You had an established business when you started. Yes, you want to grow, but you're the third generation. You have a name. You have a reputation. What about this kid that's just starting someplace? What does he have to do or she have to do?
Well, I didn't start the family business. I actually started out on my own because I was not permitted to come into the family business.
Whoa. How come?
As a matter of fact, it was, and I remember it clearly, it was the Thursday before Thanksgiving, my senior year in college, and I called my father, who was obviously running the agency, and I said, I'm ready. He said, that's terrific. For what? I said, to come into the business. He said, his comment was, that's great. I'm so excited. Let me get you an interview. And there was this silence on the phone. I was like, what are you talking about? He said, oh, I don't think you expected to start here. The best thing my father ever did for my career was send me elsewhere to learn how to prospect, how to sell. Most importantly, how to take rejection in a sales situation. Because it happens. Some people make a mistake and they don't do business with me. Okay, it happens. They'll come back later. But very simply, your question is, how do you start? When I started, I made a list, obviously long before computers. I made a list of 100.
You're that old?
No, it was before electricity. You had to make the list by candlelight.
With a quill pen.
Good. Okay. So
good, I can picture it now. Thank you.
How many people on the list were you related to?
17.
Out of?
100. The list
was
100
people?
Wait a minute. The list was 100 names that if I called them, called simply because they knew who I was, not for any reason of what I was calling for.
Do they refer to you as Mike or Michael?
Michael.
All your
whole life? There are only two people on the planet that call me Mike. One is my mother and the other is my father.
Wow.
Cool.
So very simply, I started calling these 100 names simply to say, hi, I've started a new career. I would love your help. And I wasn't looking to sell them anything. I was looking to go tell them the story of what I was doing.
What year was that, Michael? What year?
That was 1988.
Wow, that's the year I moved to Charlotte. So that's 28 years ago.
I went to see these people. Had conversations with about what I was doing, what I was looking to do, what my dreams were. Question was, who do you care about and who do you know that I can talk to?
Who do you care about?
Hold on, let's back up one second. So of the 100 people that you thought all would take your call, did you call all of them and how many of them took your call?
Over a year, all 100 took my call.
Wow, way to go.
It doesn't mean all 100 saw me over the last 28 years. And I still have the list.
I'm sure.
This is so cool. You should frame the list.
I saw the list. 97 of them saw me. 93 of them are clients.
Wow.
And I didn't ask, and I did not ask one of them to buy.
I was going with the sole, please do.
I went for the sole purpose of introducing what I was doing and who do they know that I can go see.
Mm-hmm.
I needed more names. In the insurance business and in almost any sales business, if you know your product, selling it's the easy part. The difficult part is having someone to sell it to.
Mm-hmm.
Prospecting.
Especially in insurance.
Yes, and it is difficult.
And you can tell me that people want insurance. I'm just going to tell you that they may not want it from you.
That's true.
Because they got a brother-in-law, they got an Aunt Nellie, they got somebody, a friend, a next-door neighbor down the
street.
Someone
they feel obligated to.
Right.
Yeah.
And you know what? You're absolutely correct. There are many, many people in the insurance business, in all different parts of the insurance business. And all I say to someone is, you have someone in the business, in your family, that's terrific. I'm someone's insurance person in their family as well. So I totally get it. All I want you to do is keep my phone number. Should a question come up you're afraid to ask, you're embarrassed to ask, never hesitate to call.
Cool.
Because you never know what goes on in life.
And also, I found that when you do business with family, it ain't good business.
You know what? I don't always agree with that. I love doing business with friends and family. Who do I want to help more? Strangers?
No.
Or
family.
Friends and family?
Yeah.
And I must tell you, the strangers that become clients become friends.
But the family people, they don't always want to spill their beans. They don't want to, show their dirty laundry.
Okay.
That, you know, those kind of things.
And you're absolutely correct. And guess what? Some will, some won't. So what? Next.
Move on. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't get crazy about it. Is it disappointing? Of course it is, because I know I can help these people.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to help. So there have been plenty of times I've referred someone in my sphere to someone else who I know will do a good job.
Cool.
I just want these people protected properly.
That's good. That's a great philosophy, Michael.
I love the Michael 100. That's what I'm going to call it.
Yeah, the Michael 100. I like that.
I love that.
So can we switch for just a minute?
Sure.
You're the mayor. Do people call you on the
yes.
phone and go, hey, we need a new street, or hey, we need I got a pothole over here.
Oh, potholes are big. We're coming up to that time of year. Potholes are real big.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, last year I was driving at 4:15 in the morning and went into a pothole, boom, boom, popped two tires, front and back.
Whoa.
Passenger side.
Whoa.
Now, it was very early in the morning, and it happened to have been a Monday, of which we had a town council meeting. And I'm sitting up on the dais center chair and just in conversation. Someone asked about potholes. I said, now, wait a minute, and I told them the story. Later that week in the local newspaper, one of the small articles on page 2 or 3 said, Mayor meets pothole, pothole wins.
Great. You know that in this election,
that's great.
In this election, pot and potholes are going to be two big issues.
We're going to keep with the potholes.
I guarantee you, pot's going to be an issue in New Jersey pretty soon because all these states are making money and New Jersey needs it.
Well, I'm not sure the governor of New Jersey, like him or not, is going to go down that road.
Yeah, but he's got the tasty cakes to prove it. So I want to find out how you sell yourself. How do you use your sales skills as a politician?
The same way as I do in any other venue. I look someone square in the eye and I say hello.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? I don't have to sell. If I'm in my political role, I'm walking up to people. What's my job? I represent the people. I listen to their worries. I listen to their concerns. I can't always help them immediately.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm listening to them, and I know where to go to start a process. Doesn't always go the way they want it. As long as I am forthright,
yeah,
honest with them, and tell them where we are in the process, because government moves slowly.
Sure. Do you ever sell insurance to any of your constituents?
Well, many, many people in Livingston are my clients long before I was mayor.
Mm-hmm.
long before I was elected. But like anything else you do, you don't do something in a volunteer or elected way for business. It's not why you do it. I ran for office.
Why did you do it? What made you interested in becoming mayor?
I love politics, and I love my town, and I wanted to give back. I've done a number of different things in town. I was president of a religious institution for 4 years. Took a couple years off. Was looking for something new. Was asked if I'd be interested to run. Thought about it for about 15 seconds. Said yes.
Cool. And did you care what party it was?
I am a registered Democrat.
That wasn't my answer. That wasn't my question. Did you care what party it was? When someone said, do you want to run for mayor, did you say, are you a Democrat or a Republican, or did you just say yes?
No. I said yes.
Yeah, exactly. So the party is superseded by the person, isn't it?
Well, is it superseded by the person?
Yeah. I think I'd rather vote for a person than a party.
Oh, okay. I misunderstood. Yes, absolutely. Especially at the local level.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's going on in the national news now is crazy. You know, it's nuts, the presidential election and the things that are being said and not said and all that kind of stuff. At the local level, I have always believed there really should not be party politics.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are people in my party who would be very angry if they heard me say this. But
we'll send them a
realistic.
Copy.
Please do. But let's be realistic. The issues in Livingston, New Jersey are not partisan issues. They're,
mm-hmm.
as you said, potholes, schools, construction,
yep.
taxes. They,
safety.
It's not abortion. It's
yep.
not these
right.
other things.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Okay, so let's get back to sales.
Yeah, let's. I still want to know, how as a politician do you sell your point of view, or do you sell your, you know, the attraction of you the way you would sell insurance?
I sell my point of view or my opinion on a topic simply by telling them how I feel honestly. There's no games. I may not agree with them. I give everybody the opportunity to air their feelings. And then I look them square in the eye and give them my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Agreeing or not. It's not always easy. And there are times that we're in a council meeting and there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people in the room really angry about something.
Mm-hmm.
It is my job and the members of the council's job to hear them, but also realize that if there are 100 people in the room complaining about something, Livingston has just shy of 30,000 residents. There are 29,000 plus other residents who also have to have their feelings met.
Mm-hmm.
So it cannot be just who has the loudest voice.
Right.
And that's what happens frequently.
That's good, Michael. I like that. Do you ever tell people that you're entitled to your wrong opinion?
Not from the dais.
<Got it>. Well, we're going to do a rant today, and my rant is going to be on politicians trying to sell their point of view to other people and how they get them to buy. Because
it's better than having a rant on politicians trying to sell insurance.
Exactly. Well,
that is better.
It's a lot more difficult. So let's talk about referrals for just a minute. Jenny, you talk.
Well, Michael, you're great at getting and giving referrals. How important is that in the insurance business?
It's imperative. It's a lifeline.
Ooh.
The bottom line is.
And so what's your secret?
The bottom
to
line
them?
For me is, as I said before, selling insurance is easy. Having someone to sell it to is the hardest part.
Mm-hmm.
So if I do my job right, one of the ways I get paid, and I tell my clients this, one of the ways I get paid is not wasting time cold calling and cold canvassing like we did in the old days. Rather, who do you know that I can talk to that you care about, that you want well protected? So that
you
I'm
make
not
it so emotional with the you care about, because now I really want to like help someone
yeah,
that
before
I care
the interview,
about.
We didn't
I love
like
that,
you that
question.
Much. Now we really like you. Hey, yeah.
You know, say that it's emotional. It is emotional. because
I love that you bring
insurance
the emotion
is an emotional purchase.
Totally.
So what's your secret? I mean, besides asking that question, you have a pretty high rate of referral business. So what's your secret? What does someone new in the industry do to really drive home those referrals?
To get referrals, you have to be able, one, to ask for them. That's one of the hardest parts of the industry, asking. Knowing that you need to is easy. Physically asking is the hard part. But you know what? You make it a game. I go to a prospect, to a client, with a list of names that I have already done my homework, whether it be through LinkedIn or Facebook.
Oh, yeah. That's cool.
Or simply my conversations with the client over weeks and weeks and weeks, doing fact-finding and digging in, who are the trustees of your trust? Who are the guardians of your children? If I walk into someone's office and they have a photograph on their credenza of a golf outing, the first question I'm going to say is, who are the three other guys?
Yeah. Cool.
I like to play a game, and I say to them, if you were at a charity event and you won dinner for four, you and your wife and another couple, at the best restaurant in town, who's the first couple you call?
To take them to Wendy's in Livingston.
Hey, you know what? We don't have Wendy's, but we have some of the like. So, but that's the person. If that whoever that first name is, that's someone close.
That's top of mind. Yeah. Do you have a Wawa? Do you have a Wawa in Livingston?
No, but they are looking to come to Livingston.
Oh, cool.
Wow.
Who would you take to the ball game? Who would you take to the theater? That's how you jog people's minds. Years ago, and Jen, you don't remember this, but I know, Jeffrey, you do. People had on their desk Rolodexes.
Yep.
I remember that.
Oh, Jen, you do not.
I do too. My mom had one.
And we used to say, let's go through the Rolodex. Let's start with A. Let's get 15 names.
Yeah.
You can't do that anymore. So we have to come to them with names and recommend, hey, I would love to meet so-and-so. How do you know them? And we start having conversations. And it's all about conversations. And you said it before, Jen, it's about emotion. And most importantly, it's about trust.
What percentage would you say, Michael, of the, you ask people for names. What percentage of the people just give you names without you asking or create unsolicited referrals to you at this moment in your career?
20, 25. I'd like it to be higher, but I have no control over that. If the question was, what's the percentage of people that give referrals when you ask and you've done your work?
Uh-huh.
That number is well into the 90s.
Wow. That's a good number, Michael.
Yeah, that's really good. Michael, this is amazing insight and information. You have to come back and talk to us more. But for now, I want to say thank you for joining us. And you can learn more about Michael and his business at GloronAgency.com. It's GLORON agency.com.
Thank you. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, guys. Have a great night.
Great interview, Michael.
You too.
Yeah, great stuff there from Michael. One thing that stuck out to me, guys, is his quote on his family name and his name is on the door. And that influences how he sells each and every day and how he carries himself and how dedicated he is. And I just think that that's an attitude, regardless of whether your family name is on the door and regardless of what industry you're in, you have to treat, if you want to be successful, you have to treat it as if your family name is on the door.
Jen and I both know Michael. Jen knew him before I did and introduced me to him. But I can tell you that he should give lessons on how to be an insurance agent.
Oh, for sure.
He's
actually the way he goes about business, getting new business, keeping current business, all of that can lend over to any industry. It doesn't just have to be insurance. he's real smart about it, and he's genuine about it, and that's why people want to work with him. I met him this morning to sign, you know, just a few papers.
Right,
and, I was excited to do it.
Right.
Well, he knows the most basic level of human interaction that, you know, you look someone in the eye and you say hello. That's where you start. We get these questions all the time about how do you talk? How do I talk to people? How do I get the meeting? Blah, blah, blah. And there's a base level of you look somebody in the eye, or you call them and you directly say, hello, how can I help you?
People forget that today because they're so much on their phones and in this other world that they're not actually present.
Yeah. I don't like people that have, this is my third email to you. Okay. What's your point? I deleted the first two and I'm about to delete this one.
All right, Jeffrey, why don't you tell us about our sponsor this evening?
Well, as you know, a lot of people take their lunch break, take their breakfast break. Companies now offer breakfast. Bring your own coffee. Death Wish Coffee is our sponsor, and they are by far the world's strongest and the world's best tasting coffee. DeathWishCoffee.com. Go there, subscribe to their stuff, and then I dare you to unsubscribe.
It's made from the strongest possible combination of perfectly roasted beans, and they have 100% no bullshit money back guarantee. So why wouldn't you try it?
And when a girl says bullshit, you know she means it. You know what I mean?
Hell yeah. I mean, yeah. We drink it in the studio when we do the show. I'm drinking some right now. Jeffrey, I can see you drinking some. What are you waiting for? Go get your first bag of the world's strongest coffee at deathwishcoffee.com.
K-cups and by the pound.
All right, I have an exciting announcement. We're starting a new segment on the show that some of you who may be familiar with Jeffrey's work, you may recognize. It's Sales Rants. It's where we share what's really bugging us. We get it out in the world of sales. Jeffrey, what's on your mind?
Well, at the moment, I'm hungry. I haven't had dinner yet. Oh,
sales,
you mean like
rant, not
sales
hunger rant.
I got it. Okay. Well, as we were talking to Michael Silverman, it became apparent to me that politicians are now taking over the sales world and will for the next 100 days until the presidential election finally determines which blockhead will be elected.
Will be mercifully over.
Exactly. And in the meantime, every politician who's up for reelection must sell themselves and their point of view to other people who need to make a decision. They're going to vote. They're going to buy somebody. It's Mary against Bill or Bob against Joe. And I want to know, how does that person come across realistically? Because typically when you watch some politician, it's like a blustery kind of bullshit kind of thing. And your meter is already screaming bullshit before they even start to talk. They talk in platitudes. They don't say one damn thing. And they figure if they don't say anything wrong, that maybe half the people will vote for them. There has to be a more specific thing. There has to be more specific things. And I think that's one of the biggest challenges of salespeople. How do they sell their point of view to other people so that someone would vote for them, that someone would vote for them over their competition? And if you call on somebody and the customer perceives bullshit, they're not going to buy. It's plain and simple. I don't care what you're selling. You couldn't give it away. So it's a matter of the salesperson learning lessons from politicians and not doing what they do.
Well, and just I think it's just recognizing when you watch a politician speak, people naturally recognize whether they feel inspired or whether they do not buy it. And salespeople can do the same thing and hopefully take a lesson from that and recognize, oh, this person's saying X and I'm not feeling inspired. So maybe I should not say those type of things on a sales call.
And tell me what's real. Just give me something that I can sink my teeth into, not a bunch of platitudes that I have no concept of, you know, our customers love us. Really? Show me a couple. That's where I'm at. That's my rant for the day. What about you, Jen? What's on your mind, sweetie pie? You beautiful girl, you in New York City.
If I ask for a lime, I want a lime. I don't want a lemon.
Something's wrong with your microphone. Something's wrong with your earphone. Something's wrong with something.
Hold on. Is that better?
Way better.
Okay, cool. If I ask for a lime, I want a lime. I drink club soda a lot. I order club soda with lime. Not club soda with lemon and lime. Club soda with lime. There's no lemon in there. I don't even say the word lemon. I just say lime. But the problem is, servers who are in restaurants are not paying attention. They're not listening to what I'm ordering. They're just thinking, oh, she wants a lemon and lime. No, I don't want a lemon. I don't want the taste of lemon in my club soda. And so it's maybe a really small detail to the server, and they may not think it's that.
You're so picky.
I'm not that picky. I just want a lime.
So here's the deal. So tell the, you know, ma'am, you may think that I'm picky. No, I'm tippy. I'm tippy.
I'm totally tippy. If you give me the right drink, I'm going to be generous and give you an amazing tip. But if you mess up my drink because you can't write it down or pay attention, then I'm not going to give you a 20% tip because you don't deserve it. And so I started thinking about, this is sales. What are you doing that may be pissing off your customers? What are you doing where you're not listening or you're not delivering? Because this may be a small detail, and yes, it may seem like I'm picky. And you know what? I may be a little picky, okay? Just like a little.
Customers are picky.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. And it matters to me. And so there are things that are going to matter to your customers. And my challenge is figure it out and listen to them.
And it sounds like not only listening, but just staying focused throughout the day.
Yeah.
Right, and paying attention to the detail. Just write it down. Chick wants lime.
Those were both great sales rants. If you have a sales rant that you would like to share with us, make sure to email it to sellordie@gittimer.com, and we will read it right here on the show.
Oh, my gosh. Do we have any more Reddit stuff?
Oh, yeah, we do. We have a few more questions from
– let's hear them,
yeah,
Doug.
Let me pull those up.
Come on.
Oh, man. My question. Here we go. A Reddit user with a name that's it's a little bad even for our uncensored show. I can't read it. But
the word small in there?
No.
Is the C word in there?
No.
Okay.
Fine. Anyway, no. Don't make me say it. You're just guessing until I'm going to say it. No. Does it
rhyme with anything?
No. .gam. So this Reddit user writes, I'm applying for a sales job and the sales manager sent over a script and instructed me to leave him a voicemail in order to evaluate my telecommunication skills, my voice, and my delivery.
That's cool.
What exactly do you think they're looking for, and what advice would you give on leaving this voicemail?
Well, don't sound like you're reading the script. There's a reason why we do this show live. Sales happen live.
We don't have a script here at all. There's no script in this show whatsoever.
Even if there were a script, it wouldn't sound like we're reading one.
Right. Because you know why? We're capable of ad-libbing. So we're giving this kid the answer. Number one, get familiar with the script that your boss asks. Number two, don't say it word verbatim. Go off script just a little bit. Add a couple of little friendly flares to it. Number three, sound friendly. Sound like you're having a conversation, not like you're reading off of a piece of paper. You do those three things, you're going to get the job.
I'm going to add two more.
All right.
Smile, because he
you could feel it. Yep.
You could feel it.
Yep.
And number five, whatever your Reddit username is that's uncensored, that we can't even
like
say
tomorrow.
On our show, don't say it on your voicemail.
Right. Oh, yeah. By the way, this is Bob the Jackass.
And our final question comes from Reddit user His Coy Mistress. His Coy Mistress writes, I work at a company that's been around for 13 years, but recently they did a reorganization, a rebranding, and they gave me a quota of X for this quarter, which I hit 50% mid last month. But now they've decided this month they're going to more than triple that quota. I've pretty much exhausted my pipeline, and the sales cycle here is average about 4 to 6 months. I won't make any money at the end of the quarter now. What would you advise me to do?
Go talk to your boss. Tell him or her what the real situation is and get them to make their expectations more realistic. Otherwise, you're going to have to seek greener pastures because you can't.
Yeah, I wonder what the biggest competitor looks like.
Exactly.
They may be looking for you.
Is there You know, a certain
when a company reorgs like that, and then they start messing around with quota, and then they mess around with quota in the middle of the quarter, that's not good.
That's bullshit. Yeah, that's a sign of a boss who's a real ass.
Or a company who's really struggling and needs to make numbers that they've promised to investors or to whomever that they're probably not going to make.
Yep.
And they're going to reorg again.
All right. Thanks for all of those great questions and comments. Keep them coming. And make sure to subscribe to us on iTunes there's a vacuum of sound here. I got to get my airtime. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Whatever you use to get your podcast, just make sure you search Sell or Die and re-listen to these episodes whenever you need a sales boost of confidence.
Daytime, nighttime, lunchtime, earphone time. Come on.
Jen, you had the video.
Thanks for listening to the Sell or Die podcast. We're back live next week at our regular time, Wednesdays, 7 p.m. Eastern time. Bookmark blogtalkradio.com/sellordie. And come join the conversation that's revolutionizing sales podcasting.
And thank you to our guest, Mayor Michael Silverman. Our producer is Doug Branson. Our technical director is Chris Hill. And our new social media person, the great Morgan Gradowski, is standing by to tweet your stuff until you can follow us.
Until next time, I'm Jen Gluckow.
And I'm Jeffrey Gittimer, reminding you to get out there and sell anything you possibly can, even if your ass falls off.